personal encounters with God during this most blessed and spiritual time of the year. And that's why we're focusing on the prayer meetings after the meeting, that we focus on coming closer and spending as much time as we can with God during this time. And so, Sam can.
Sorry?
Do you want the stand? Or would you like to hold the mic?
No, I prefer the stand. Hello. So can everyone hear me at the back? Good to hear.
Sorry, what was that, sir?
Good to hear. Okay, so the topic that I was given was sitting at the feet, sitting at Jesus' feet with Mary. But tonight I want to examine the character of Mary and the situations that she finds herself in the Bible and what lessons we can glean from her life. So there are three times we hear of St. Mary in the Bible. That's not St. Mary, sorry. Three times we hear of Mary of Bethany. Three main times. Can you tell me what they were? One of them is sitting at Jesus' feet. What else? Oh, Anna, I can always count on you.
When Lazarus was resurrected.
Sorry? When Lazarus was raised. Oh, okay. I think you said when Jesus resurrected.
When Jesus raised.
Ah, yeah, when Jesus raised Lazarus from the dead. Good work. And another time, it's a tricky one, Mary of Bethany. It's for the HD students. Do we have any HD students? Guess not. What did she do when Jesus was sitting at the table? Come on, I've given the hint. Somebody just say. No? She anointed Jesus' feet with oil or with ointment, and she washed his feet with her hair. So they're the three times we hear about Mary of Bethany. And if we look at just each one of those times, that we see her, or we meet her in the Gospels. I just want to just take some lessons away from each of those encounters that she has with Christ. So the first one is Mary sitting at Jesus. Do we have Bibles? Shaklana, we don't have Bibles. Look, if everyone has phones, it's fine. These phones. If we could read Luke 10, 38 to 42. And Sam, you look like you got it. Can you read it, big loud voice?
Luke 10,
38 to 42.
Now it happened as they went that he entered a certain village, and a certain woman named Martha welcomed him into her house. And she had a sister called Mary, who also sat at his feet and heard his word. But Martha was distracted with much serving. And she approached him and said, Lord, do you not care that my sister has left me to serve alone? Therefore, tell her to help me. And Jesus answered and said to her, Martha, Martha, you are worried and troubled about many things. But one thing is needed, and Mary has chosen that good part, which will not be taken away from her.
Okay, so first things to note here, does God criticize Martha for what she's doing? What do you guys think? No? Yes? I'm seeing a head nod and a head shake. What is it? Yes or no? Personally, I don't think that Jesus is criticizing Martha. I think that would run contrary to what his message is. Serving the Lord is a beautiful thing. And she was preparing her house to the Lord, and she had fervent love to the Lord. And you'll see that throughout all her life, that she had a fervent love for the Lord. But Christ is saying there is something much more important than cooking. Something much more important than preparing the meal. There is only one thing that is necessary for your salvation. One thing is needful, and that is to sit at the feet of Christ. And Mary was not concerned about the food. She didn't care who was fed. She didn't care how they were fed. She didn't care who cleaned up. All she cared about was sitting at the feet of Christ. And I remember, just it's so interesting. I remember like one time I've told some of the guys this story. Abuna Tadros, your Malati, was at my house. And he was taught. Does anyone know Buna Tadrasu Malati? He's like heavy of the heavies. He's like next level. On the same level with the Buna Sri Kaman, they served in the same church. They're both pretty heavy. And he was sitting at our house and he was giving us a, and he was just talking to us. And then a bishop came over. A bishop from somewhere I don't even remember. But he came over our house and he didn't say hello. You know, when a bishop walks in, you know, everyone says Kesmarot and all of the hoo ha. There was none of that. He walked into the house and he did a matanya before Abuna Tadrasu Malati, and he sat down at his feet and he didn't open his mouth for the whole time that he was there. Normally when a bishop goes somewhere, he's the highest rank and he speaks, but he recognized that it was more beneficial for him to sit at the feet of this holy man and to learn from him and not open his mouth. And I think how much more so must we sit at the feet of Christ? How much more so is it important for us to not open our mouths, not say anything, not do anything, but just sit at Christ's feet? And so, if you can imagine the scene in this house, it was probably packed with people. So many people in this house. Everywhere Jesus went, he was thronged by followers. Everywhere he went. You'd think maybe Jesus was like this small-time thing that was happening in Palestine. Actually, this was probably the biggest thing that happened in Palestine for hundreds and hundreds of years. Jesus was huge. And everywhere he went, you hear when he was at Peter's house, people could not get into the house. And so what did they do with the lame man? Thank you, Anna. Jeez, I tell you, we've missed you, pretty servants. They raised him up and they put him down through the roof because they couldn't get access to Christ. They couldn't get access to him. So if you can imagine the scene, it would have been a very busy house. But I want you to think, where would the quietest place in that house have been? I want you to compare it to St. Mark's on a Sunday. If you come to St. Mark's Church on a Sunday, if you go closer, if you're a deacon, you can actually hear what's happening. You can actually hear Rabuna, you can participate a little bit. And the further you come back in the church, the worse it gets. You've got screaming kids, probably mine. You've got crying babies. You've got, when you get even further to the back, you see women sitting in the guys' section. And it's just total chaos. It's just madness. And there's no concentrating at the back. I've never stood at the back during a Sunday because, quite frankly, I can't even see what's happening. There's no concentrating on anything. It's just like, you know, trying to like get a glimpse of Abuna. And the quietest place in the church is right at the front. If you want to be in the best spot in the church, unfortunately for females, it's not possible, but you serve in the altar. That's the quietest spot in the church, and you have no distractions. You can't hear anyone around you. And so it would have been the same in this house. The people at the back may not have been able to hear Jesus. There would have been noises of dishes and things like that, and they wouldn't have been able to hear Jesus. But where is the one spot that you were guaranteed to be able to hear him? The one spot where Mary chose was at his feet. The one place where you're guaranteed no distractions. All you're doing is looking up and listening to the word of God. And this is where Mary was. And it was a place of not only quietness, but stillness. And when we read in the book of Kings, Christ is heard in a still, small voice. And in one of the Psalms, I think it's Psalm 46, it says, "Be still and know that I am God." And I think that Mary sitting at Christ's feet, looking up at him, slowly, 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 was growing in the understanding of who God was understanding who this man Jesus represented. But she could only make that realization by sitting at his feet. And so, like it is at St. Mark's, this understanding of God, of who he is so much more difficult when you're all the way at the back. When you're just trying to catch a glimpse. When you're just hearing phrases every now and again popping in. It's so much harder to understand and know God. And so this is the place where Christ is found, in stillness and by sitting at his feet. And as Christians, we are all called to serve. We are all called to serve others. But I think that our service is flavored by how often we sit at Christ's feet. And if you think about it, what is the purpose of your service? If you go out to feed the homeless, if you go out to nursing homes, if you serve in Sunday school, if you serve in the kitchen, what is the purpose, the underlying purpose of it all? Is to lead people to the feet of Christ with you, to bring them by the hand and lead them to the feet of Christ. And I'm sure that Mary, and there is Orthodox tradition that Mary was an active missionary after the resurrection of Christ. But I believe that by sitting at his feet, her service was powered. It was strengthened by that relationship. And so she recognized that while she had Christ, while he was there, she needed to sit and listen at his feet. So Christ was not telling Martha not to serve. He was not saying what you're doing is wrong. But what he was doing was putting everything in their proper order. The first priority in your life, and really the only priority in your life, is to sit at Christ's feet and to have a personal relationship with him. I remember Johnny gave a talk in our pre-service a few weeks ago, and he said the most important thing to remember about service is that it is not the most important thing. The most important thing is your personal relationship with God. And everything else, including service, is secondary to your personal relationship and reliant on your personal relationship with God. If you have no personal relationship with God, if you don't sit at his feet, then don't worry about service. You're not achieving anything. No matter how much you serve, no matter how much you apply yourself, you're not achieving anything. Everything in your life is reliant on this personal relationship with God. In Psalm 27, which is one of the most beautiful psalms, it says, "One thing I have desired of the Lord, that I will seek, that I may dwell in the house of the Lord all the days of my life, to behold the beauty of the Lord and to inquire in his temple." And so if you do nothing else in your life, nothing else in your life but sit at the feet of Christ, then this is the most valuable life that could ever be lived. And you see it with the monks and you see it with the hermits. I know there was I don't know if some of you know him, there's a monk that used to serve. His name was Abuna Philemon. And he served with us in Australia for many years. And he touched a lot of lives and we were very close to him. And before he came here, he was the abbot of St. Anthony's Monastery, which is an incredibly honourable position. St. Anthony's Monastery is one of the biggest, and he was the abbot. And he was an incredibly successful abbot of that monastery. But after a while, he just, one day, I got a call from my brother-in-law, said, "Come over, Abuna's leaving, he's gone to Egypt tomorrow." And that was it. And he went. And we haven't seen him since. He left about 6 months ago, or however long it was. We haven't seen him since. But when you speak to him, you say, "Abuna, we want you to come back. You know, we miss you, this and that. Sydney misses you." And he said he refuses. He just doesn't want to leave his monastery. And he's been asked to be abbot. The bishop of his monastery wants him to be abbot again. He's been asked to serve in a number of different dioceses. But he refuses to leave his cell. At this point in his life, this is his home, sitting at the feet of Christ. And for him to leave that again and to go somewhere else is he's losing that. And there was another monk that I went that when I was at St. Anthony's Monastery that I met, and his cell was located, you know, a good drive outside of the monastery, right in the desert. And we're there one night with him, and if you're there, you can't hear any sound. It's complete stillness and complete quiet. And every day he would go out and walk in the desert for 2 hours at twilight, and he'd come back to his cell. And I once asked him, I said to him, "Oh, would you ever consider leaving and coming and serving in the Lord?" It was just the most shocking thing to him that he would ever, ever leave that beautiful place. And you know what, when I was there, I didn't want to leave that place. You know, it was just such a peaceful place that you can't hear a sound, and all of your troubles and all of your thoughts are gone because you're in this complete place where nothing else matters. And who could leave a place like that? And so these monks that have dedicated themselves to sitting at Christ's feet have no interest in anything else. No worldly glory, no wealth, nothing. They have no interest, but they've chosen to sit at Christ's feet for the rest of their lives. So for us, I think that we have to be careful. And obviously we're not monks, but I think we have to be careful in how busy our lives are. Jesus said to Martha, "You were distracted with many things." And we need to think about how many things are we distracted with? Study, career, relationship, friends, service. All of these things are great. It's great to have good friends. It's great to have a good service. It's great to have a good career. It's great to have a nice relationship. But if they're distracting us from God, then there's a problem. If we don't have time to sit at his feet because of all of these things, then we must recognize that there's a problem. So practically, I think during Lent, I think we need to try and make every effort to sit with Christ. Every effort to sit at his feet. How do we do this? Well, you know, the beauty of orthodoxy is that you can approach Christ in a multitude of different ways. Abu Nabushir Campbell used to say that if you stare at the image of Christ on a cross, then you can never go back to sin after that. If you just sit and contemplate on the cross, it is the most amazing deterrent for sin. So that's one way that we can sit at Christ's feet. Just contemplate on his passion, put an image or an icon of him in front of our eyes, and just contemplate on it. And, you know, it was amazing. I see, I've never heard such beautiful hymns ever. Our youth meeting when I was growing up was woeful compared to those hymns that I heard. I don't know. That's America. That was fantastic. But if you're like someone who likes music, and I love music, even though I have a terrible voice and I'm tone deaf, but I love music. And if you're someone who likes music, then sit at the feet of Christ and sing hymns. And sing hymns of praise, sing hymns of repentance, and that's your worship. That's your relationship with God. And he knows that that's what you like and that's what you're offering to him. Another way of sitting at Christ's feet is the Jesus Prayer. So, the Eastern Orthodox books, The Way of the Pilgrim, the pilgrim in that book, I think it's fictional, recites the Jesus Prayer 12,000 times a day. So I don't know how long that will take, but I imagine that will take all day to recite it 12,000 times a day. But I think that by sitting at Christ's feet and maybe having a rosary or something with you and just reciting the Jesus Prayer is a beautiful way, and you'll find that it transforms your prayer and gives you spiritual energy just by reciting those prayers. And if you don't have a rosary, there's actually an app. I don't know if it's on iPhone, but it's an Android app. It's called Prayer Rope, and you just press it and then it vibrates every time you tap it. And then when you get to 100, it vibrates like twice, so you know you've finished. It's pretty cool. So if anyone is interested in that app, then go for it. I didn't design it. I'm not plugging it. So another way to sit at Christ's feet, another way to really develop a relationship with God and develop your prayer life is to contemplate on the Psalms. Now, the Psalms are the most beautiful pieces of literature that we have that's ever written. And they're the most beautiful prayers that are ever written. So I really recommend that during Lent, we all make an effort to learn some Psalms. Pick the Psalms that you like the most and learn them. And whenever you have the chance, recite the Psalms in your mind. When you're driving, when you're walking, when you're praying at night, recite the Psalms. It will colour your prayer in a way that you won't imagine. So I think that as we're going to see, sitting at the feet of Christ is the prerequisite for everything good in our spiritual life. It is the foundation for everything that we do. And so we'll move on to the next point, the next time we see Mary, which is like Anna told us, when Jesus raised Lazarus from the dead. So if we can read John 11, 28 to 37. Mark B, you look like you've got it. Sorry, I'm picking people, I know their names. John 11, 28 to 37. Loud voice.
Now Martha, as soon as she heard that Jesus came, went and met him. But Mary was sitting in the house. Now Martha said to Jesus, Lord, if you had been here, my brother would not have died. But even now I know that what you ask of God, God will do. Jesus said to her, your brother will rise again. Martha said to him, I know that he will rise again in the resurrection at the last day. Jesus said to her, I am the resurrection and the life. He who believes in me, though he may die, he shall live. And whoever lives and believes in me shall never die. Do you believe this? She said to him, yes, Lord, I believe that you are the Christ, the Son of God, who is to come into the world.
You keep going.
And when she had said these things, she went her way and secretly called her and sister, saying, the teacher has come and is calling for you. As soon as she heard that, she rose quickly and came to him. Now Jesus had not yet come into the town, but was in the place where Martha met. Then the Jews who were with her in the house came comforting her. When they saw that Mary rose up quickly and went out, followed her, saying, she is going to the tomb to meet him. Then when Mary came where Jesus was and saw him, she fell down at his feet, saying, Lord, we have been here, my brother was on her side. Therefore, when Jesus saw her weeping, and the Jews who came to her weeping, the groaning of the Spirit was troubled. said, "Where are you waiting?" They said to him, "Lord, come and see." Jesus went. Then the Jews said, "See how he loved him."
Okay. Exalted. So we know what Jesus goes on to do. He goes on to raise Lazarus from the dead. Now, does anyone think this is a coincidence that God chose this particular family to do this miracle to? This is probably the most powerful miracle that he does in his whole mission. Is it a coincidence that he picked this particular family? I think it's highly unlikely. Mary and Martha are probably two of the examples of the women who loved God with the most fervor. And God, Christ, he shows how much he loves them back. Now, does God love everyone equally? Most certainly, yes, is the Sunday school answer. Definitely he loves everyone equally. But does everyone feel his love the same? So in practical effect, does he love everyone equally? Of course not, because we allow ourselves to feel as much of God's love as we open up to him. So Mary and Martha had opened up their entire lives to him. You see how much they loved him? And therefore God's love for them was felt immensely by them. And it's funny, it's so interesting. Jesus refused to do this miracle without Mary present. He told Martha, "Go and get Mary," and he called her by name. He said, "Go and get Mary and bring her here," because he refused to do the miracle without Mary being present. As if by her love, she'd earned the right to be a direct witness of the miracle. And so Jesus called her by name, and I think this is the benefit of sitting at Christ's feet, is that Jesus knows you. This happened after this event where Mary was sitting at his feet. And Christ knew her by name. And he recognized her face. Why? Because when he looked down while he was speaking, or when he looked down, hers was the face that was staring up at him. And so Christ doesn't know people just because they're baptized. Christ doesn't know people just because they have communion every Sunday. Christ does not know people just because they serve Sunday school. He says in the gospel, "Not everyone who says to me, 'Lord, Lord,' shall enter the kingdom of heaven, but he who does the will of my Father in heaven. Many will say to me in that day, 'Lord, Lord, have we not prophesied in your name, cast out demons in your name, and done many wonders in your name?' And then I will declare to them, 'I never knew you. Depart from me, you who practice lawlessness.'" So these are people who are Christians. These are people who, by all accounts, prophesying, casting out demons, and doing miracles. Probably the best Christians that you can imagine. But Christ says, "I never knew you. Depart from me, you who practice lawlessness." So we have to recognize that God, Christ, he was not saying miracles, prophecies, all of those things are bad. But he's saying the first and most important thing is that he knows us. And so Christ knows those who sit at his feet. He knew Mary by name, and she came to witness the incredible miracle. So if we know Christ, if we sit at his feet, and if we have a relationship with him, he will not miss an opportunity to show us his power. He will not miss an opportunity to demonstrate his glory to us. What does it say in Chronicles? "The eyes of the Lord run to and fro throughout all the earth to show himself strong on behalf of those whose heart is loyal to him." So the image that you get there is Christ is looking for people he recognizes. He's looking for faces that are familiar to demonstrate how glorious he is. It's almost like he's trying to show off on our behalf. And so this is the benefit of sitting at his feet. So I think that if you have any petition, whether it's you're struggling with a certain sin, or you want God to open a particular door for you, then I think it is very important to sit at his feet for him to know you. I think that there are many miracles that are happening all around us all the time. I think every day there are incredible miracles. Just by living, life is a miracle. I think one of the Psalms that says, "Day unto day utters speech, and night unto night reveals knowledge." You know, the world around us reveals the mystery of God. But the problem is our eyes aren't open to it. But when you know God and when you have a relationship with him, everything changes. Your eyes become open, and he will listen to your petition and your prayer. There's a book that C.S. Lewis wrote. It's called Till We Have Faces. I'd recommend that we that you read it if you're interested. It's like a fiction story, but with a, it's like an allegorical fiction, which has like a, it's like a, has like a sweet meaning at the end. And the whole purpose of that book is he's saying that we can never really know God. We can never really ask things for God until we know ourselves, until we know Him and know ourselves. Our petitions are useless, because we're asking the wrong questions. You know, we say, why God did you let me go through this? Well, that's not the question you should be asking. You know, why did this door get closed? That's not the issue. And so I think by sitting at His feet, we finally develop an understanding of who we are and who God is. And therefore our petitions are in line with the will of God. And therefore He will answer our prayers all the time, because our prayers will always be for His will. And so I think that that when we sit at Christ's feet, then this is the best way to have your petitions answered, because God will try and show Himself strong on your behalf. He will want to demonstrate how glorious He is because you are His friend. And this leads me to the next point of this passage, was that when Jesus saw Mary weeping, what did He do? It says, and when He saw her weeping, He was deeply moved and troubled in the spirit, and He groaned. And it's almost like a love story. It's really quite beautiful that Christ saw this human mortal weeping, and Him in His divinity, He was so moved with compassion that He wept. And so I think that when we are, when we're troubled and when we're at the depths of despair, when we're at His feet, He mourns with us. When we are suffering a loss, He suffers that loss with us. When we sin and we repent and we're really upset about what we've done, He feels for us. He understands what we're going through. But the beauty of it is it doesn't stop there. God does not, He didn't just weep and then leave. He wept and then said, show me where you have laid Him. So He wept with Mary and then said, I'm going to make this better for you. And so God does not simply mourn with us, but He then gives us a reason for rejoicing. In Psalm 30 it says, you have turned for me my mourning into dancing. You have put off my sackcloth and clothed me with gladness, to the end that my glory may sing praise to you and not be silent. So the mourning is turned to dancing. The sackcloth is that really rough garment that they put on. You read it in the Old Testament when David or someone was mourning, they put ashes on their head, so literal ashes on their head, and they put sackcloth on their shoulders. Sackcloth is really rough, and so it's really uncomfortable and unpleasant to wear, but it's a sign of mourning. And what David says in this psalm is that Christ takes off that sackcloth and clothed Him with gladness. And so I think that by sitting at Christ's feet, Jesus understands and He feels for our tribulations and our dark times, but He then turns that mourning into rejoicing. So I'll just move on to the next point. Tom, do you normally finish the talk? So the next time we see Mary is in the very next chapter, and I think it's quite a beautiful passage. So can we read it? John 12, 1-8. I'm just going to read. I pick a girl, but I don't know if they have loud enough voices. Anna. Should do the trick. John 12, 1-8. 12, 1-8.
1-8?
Yeah, 1-8.
That 6 days before the Passover, Jesus came to Bethany where Lazarus was who had been dead, whom He had raised from the dead. There they made Him a supper, and Martha served, but Lazarus was one of those who sat at the table with Him. Then Mary took a pound with very costly oil of spikenard, anointed the feet of Jesus, and wiped His feet with her hair. And the house was filled with the fragrance of the oil. But one of His disciples, Judas Iscariot, Simon's son, who would betray Him, said, why was this fragrant oil not sold for 300 denarii and given to the poor? This He said, not that He cared for the poor, but because He was a thief and He had the money box, and He used to take what was put in there.
Okay.
Jesus said... Let her alone. She has kept this for the day of my burial. For the poor you have you always, but me you do not have
always. Yeah, so Mary, after having these amazing experiences we've got, sitting at his feet and then watching Lazarus get raised from the dead, comes and anoints his feet. And what she anointed his feet with was an incredibly costly ointment or perfume. And I imagine that Mary, after she had seen Lazarus raised from the dead, I think maybe she finally realized in real clarity who Christ was, and finally really understood his message and his purpose. And then she went home and she found the most precious thing she owned and she offered it to him. Now, Bethany, a lot of scholars believe that Bethany may have been a village which was an almshouse for the poor, so a place to care for the poor and the sick. So we find that there's a number of evidence for this. Simon the leper is mentioned as being at Bethany. And also the poor are only mentioned, so here you'll see that Judas and the disciples mention the poor only in Bethany. So that makes people believe that Bethany was perhaps this a village where they cared for the poor and the sick. And so if that's the case, then it's likely that Mary and Martha, their life was a life of service, and they wouldn't have had much money or anything, you know, of their own. And this was probably the most precious thing that Mary owned. It's likely that she was keeping it for her wedding day, and you know, I've heard a lot of people say that it's worth about a 1 year's salary, this ointment that she used, and she poured it out over Christ's feet. But after she had this experience with God, she went home, looked for the most precious thing, and came and bought it. And she didn't just pour it out over Christ's feet. She took her hair and she wiped his feet with her hair. And most women understand the hair is really the most important part of the body. You know, so much money spent straightening and dyeing her hair. Since I've been married to my wife, her hair color has changed at least 4 or 5 times. Not to mention the amount of money that's spent on permanent straightening and God knows what. But even the Bible recognizes this. Even Paul recognizes this. He says, if a woman has long hair, it is a glory to her, for her hair is given to her as a covering. So this was Mary's glory. Not only did she find the most precious thing, but her glory, which was her hair, she used it to wipe Jesus' feet. And if you can imagine the scene, it would have been particularly scandalous. Women did not touch men in that way in those days. You know, they ate separately, they did everything separately. It was unheard of that women behaved around men like that. It would have been almost debasing, humiliating for her to be on the floor with her hair. You'd imagine she would have had to get very low with her hair and with the anointment to wipe Jesus' feet. But this meant nothing to Mary. She didn't care what anyone thought about her. She didn't care how she looked. The only thing she did was only thing she wanted was to offer everything that she could offer to Christ. And I believe this was Mary's way of forsaking her entire life, forsaking her hopes of marriage, forsaking all of those things, and dedicating herself to a life of service for Christ. And what was the result of this offering? It says the whole house was filled with the fragrance of that ointment. The offering was so beautiful that the smell of it filled the house, and most importantly, it filled Christ's nostrils. So Christ smelt this aroma that she poured out before. So what's the point that I'm getting at? I think that once we sit at Christ's feet and we come to know him, and by knowing him, he shares in our tribulations and he performs great wonders for us. And once we have this complete relationship with him, then we offer everything we have to him regardless of what the outcome is. And you see, people that dedicate their lives to God look pretty foolish to the world. You know, whether they become monks, priests, or missionaries, or simply dedicate themselves to a life of service, to those on the outside, it makes no sense. They look foolish. You're giving up, oh my God, look how much money you're giving up. Look at how much prestige you're giving up. Look at your career, this, and this, and this. But to them, it's nothing. It's rubbish to be trampled on for a greater purpose. And so I think once we sit at his feet and once we have this relationship with him, then we take the most precious things in our lives, the most important things, you know, that are not bad but maybe keeping us away from him, and we offer them to him. And you see it with the priests that have been recently ordained, you know, Bunamark or Bunapaul or Bunadan, and even the new monks that you see at the monastery. The smell of their sacrifice is evident to everyone around them. You know, you see it in the revival that their sacrifice brings. You see it in their faces and the joy and the peace in their faces. The fragrance of their sacrifice, of what they offered, trampling down all worldly possession and trampling down all worldly hopes and dreams for the sake of Christ, you can smell it a mile away. And Christ says that anyone who gives even a cup of cold water in the name of Christ will by no means lose his reward. Even the small cup of offer that you offer, that you give, will not be forgotten. Imagine how much more was Mary's offering of, you know, this ointment that she'd been saving for her wedding, that she obviously was meant for her wedding day, and she poured it at Christ's feet and said, I don't need any of that. I offer it to you. Imagine how much more precious that is and how much a reward she'll receive from God. And so practically, do we drop out of uni and dedicate our lives to God? Perhaps, but perhaps not. I think that once we sit at his feet and once we know him, then we just simply have to take what's most precious to us and offer it to him. For example, it may be a particular friendship or relationship that's not leading us to Christ, but that relationship, you know, you can't fathom giving it up. It's hard because that relationship means so much to you that you can't fathom giving it up. But know that when you make that step, when you make that step to give up that relationship that is just taking you away from him, that is just not edifying you, when you take that step, the rewards will be boundless. And this is something that we can throw at his feet. It may not be even a relationship between a guy and a girl. It could be a friendship. It could be anything. It could be something simple like fasting. You know, like for me, you know, the most precious thing in my life is food. You know, family and friends, that's also important. But food really, like, it just powers my life. And I think that's the same with most Egyptians. So I think during the fast, this is a beautiful way. We throw what's precious to us, the food, you know, the meat and all the delicacies, and we throw it at his feet and say, we don't need this. Our sustenance is through your word, not through physical food. And so I think if there's anything that's holding you back from God, anything that you know is distracting you, that is just niggling, that's just ruining your spiritual life, trample it down for his sake. But once again, all of this is impossible. You will never do it all unless you have a relationship with him, unless you know him, unless you've tasted him. Because if you haven't, the goodness of the world is much more real to you than the goodness of God. You know, if you have a bad relationship or wealth or anything that you indulge all the time, that's tangible. That's what you have. And you don't see anything in your periphery, let alone God. But if you replace that with God, if you replace that with Christ, if you taste and see that the Lord is good, then slowly, slowly, everything else becomes much less meaningful. And that's how people become monks. They dedicate themselves to the relationship with God, that slowly, slowly, they can't fathom getting married and losing this beautiful, beautiful relationship that they've developed. They can't imagine, you know, any distractions from this single-minded pursuit, you know, because they've tasted and seen that the Lord is good and they want more. And so they're not going to do anything to risk losing it. And so I think that it is important that once we sit with God and we have a relationship with him and we know him, that we offer ourselves to him completely. Don't offer yourselves half-heartedly. Don't give just a little bit of your time. Don't give just a little bit of your effort. You know, give him everything that you have to give. You know, what is precious to you, give that to him and see what he does with it. And so I think in summary, I think it's very important in this Lent, you know, it's second week of Lent, I think it's very important that we evaluate how the first 2 weeks have gone. And if you know, you haven't, your spiritual life is the same, then don't be disheartened, but treat tonight or today or this moment as a watershed moment, you know, where you are going to progress and you're going to make some changes. And the change that you have to make in your spiritual life is this relationship with God. Like I've said, and I've said it over and over again, the everything else, service, everything in your spiritual life, like, is secondary. The most important thing in your service is to develop this relationship. So if we've gotten to this point then and nothing has changed, then treat tonight as the moment where we go home and we discover new ways of sitting at His feet. We discover new ways of knowing Him. And if you have started this progression in your Lent, keep it going. Keep it going for the remaining 40 days or whatever it is, and see what the outcome is at the end during Passion Week. And I think once we have that relationship, then Christ will know us, you know, as we also are known, as it says in Romans, Christ will know us, and He will do anything for us. Anything we ask, He will run and hasten to gladden our hearts. And once you have that relationship with Him, then it'll be your utmost pleasure, I think, to throw anything holding you back at His feet and trample it down. And glory be to God forever. Any questions? Excellent. Where are the leaders of this meeting? Conclude. Yeah.
Thanks very much.
Thank
you very much. All right, welcome back, Sam. Okay, so announcements. Tonight at 10:30, Father Mark is leading the prayer meeting downstairs, so please come downstairs and pray. It's voluntary.
That's why it's good, because, you know, it's a time for Lent, time for fasting, time to give up time and home and put it in front of Christ. So let's do that together. But do have fun, guys.